Good afternoon, Little Saigon, Seattle. Good afternoon to the various animals and creatures that have mated with coyotes. The coyote eagle, the coigle. Good afternoon, coigle. The coyote salmon. Good afternoon, camon. Good afternoon to the people of all the cities that are currently living under the shadow of darkness. Yeah, good afternoon. It is Tuesday, September the holy smokes. I think it's the 15th, right? Tuesday, September the 15th, 2020. Right around, yeah, what, 5:16 p.m. Pacific Standard Time here in Seattle? Holy crap. And it's your friend Dan, and it's the Little Saigon Report. Hey Dan, I haven't spoken to you in a while. Yeah, I know. Hey Dan, I haven't spoken with you in a while. How's it going? Yeah, what? What's up, man? What? Hey Dan, what's the color of the sky there in Seattle? Hey Dan, I haven't spoken to you in a while. Hey Dan, how's it going? Hey Dan, what color is the sky there in Seattle? And I say the color of the sky is hell. The color of the sky right now is hell. What color, Dan? Go get your box of crayons, buddy. Thank you. Yeah, if you want to ask me about the color of the sky in Seattle right now, I would tell you that the color of the sky currently is brown and orange and black and gray and angry and sad and stupid and moronic. That's the color. The color of the sky is currently hell. Color of the sky is currently the color that you would expect to see in hell. I saw something about Red Lobster that they'd come up with some new drink called the Dougarita. And it looks monstrous. It looks gross. I'm not a big fan of Mountain Dew. I know people that are. A long time ago, when I still believed in my career path and I was so excited about tech and surrounded by all the young folk talking about the games they were playing that weekend. All that Mountain Dew you need to drink to play Far Cry for 48 hours straight. You need a lot of Mountain Dew, you need a Dougarita. And then you can play Far Cry until Monday morning, and then you can roll back into your stupid job data mining health insurance records so you can reject medical claims. Dougarita, you do your own research. If you're a Mountain Dew fan and you have this really nice feeling about a nasty green sclumbus of stuff that's been in canisters mixed with rat turds and probably the parts of other dead animals and mixed together with Mountain Dew and blood and mold and probably, tossing another dead rat. That's the Dougarita. That's what I'm thinking of when I think of a Dougarita. So there's rumors going around that Donald Trump is ending the wars. And here's the thing. I'm an anarchist. I don't give a fuck about the election. I don't care who you're voting for. If voting is a therapeutic exercise whereby you get rid of all the demons, if voting is your equivalent of Tangata Manu, like the fucking people of Easter Island before they went batshit crazy and spent whatever resources they had left on giant stone statues instead of finding a way to fucking survive. Yeah. Tangata Manu, people. That's what I'm saying to people now when they say something stupid about the fucking mask. Like, oh, can you cover your nose? Tangata Manu, bitch. Why don't you go swim over to Blake Island, grab that fucking bald eagle egg in your fucking teeth, swim back. At least you won't have any, you know, shark concerns, at least not to my knowledge, given the way we've treated this fucking Puget Sound. Probably other things. Tangata Manu. So if you vote fine, vote fine. But this rumor about Trump ending the wars, I think, has a different interpretation. And here's your really optimistic, positive interpretation that you can only get on the Little Saigon Report, you fuck. And here's my interpretation, that he could also be, well, not he, the Defense Department could be repositioning troops. And you reposition troops for lots of reasons. One reason to reposition troops is because you need them for other theaters. For example, let's say they intend to shove Bill Gates' magical poisonous vaccine down everyone's fucking throat. You're going to need some guns to do that, I think. You know, they tried really hard with the race war and other kinds of bullshit to confuse us, but I don't think they quite totally succeeded. So at this point, if they want to shove Bill Gates' magical poison down our fucking throats, or shove the magical corona detector up our fucking nose without our permission, then they're going to need a lot of fucking guns. So one reason to bring troops back from Germany, or back from Iraq, or back from Afghanistan, is so you can shove Bill Gates' magical fucking poison down the throats of men, women, and children. Another reason, you know, is war with China. Yeah, that's another fucking reason to do this, to reposition troops, because they are focusing their effort towards China. You know, folks, I despise the Chinese Communist Party. I despise Xi, Winnie the Pooh. The people that rule China are no better than the people that rule America. So if we're talking about a competition, why don't we take the leaders of China and the leaders of America and put them in a giant pit, a huge pit with nothing but hunting knives and not a lot of food and not a lot of water, and leave them there for 3 or 4 weeks and see what the fuck happens. Maybe actually a month or two. I would rather see that than World War III. If you would rather see billions of people incinerated, then there is something fucking wrong with you. So I'm no fan of China, no fan of our own government, and I am a hugely opposed person to nuclear war. Thank you. So like any other sane, rational person, especially if you're a Christian, I would like all these wars to end. But what I also worry about is that, like all the other situations we've found ourselves in 2020, we're being lied to. We're being confused. This is being treated like an end to violence or a change in policy, when in reality, it's probably just repositioning troops. My guess is, at this point, the United States military is having a problem with recruitment. And that's a really nice way of putting it. My guess at this point is that whatever bullshit propaganda they produce, they can't meet their fucking quotas. And so the corona, or the COVID, or the monkey herpes, or whatever the fuck you want to call this psyop disease they've thrown on us, I think that's probably impact their ability to carry on recruitment operations, for the most part. And so, yeah, I think they're probably needing to reposition troops, on top of the fact that you can't just use any old troops, really, can you? Especially if you're going to shove poison down people's throats. You're going to need people who are very trustworthy, very dedicated, and ideally have no connection to the community they're going back to. So we'll see what happens. But I do hope it's the end to the wars, because the wars suck that much. And if Trump really does end the fucking wars, if we give the Syrians back their oil, if we take all the troops out of the Middle East and the Persian Gulf and Europe and Asia, thank fucking God. We were never supposed to be an empire. Becoming an empire made us scumbags. So thank the Lord in heaven if that happens. But I really don't think that's what's going on right now. Next subject we should get into, coyotes, and yeah, coyotes mating with crows and rabbits, creating coibits or rabotes. I don't know. Am I joking about coyotes breeding with any old fucking thing? I don't know. I mean, it's kind of a good question. I really don't know. I joked about it today that coyotes will breed with anything, that coyotes will breed with your house cat. You'll have cat-yotes. Cat-yotes are dangerous creatures. Their fangs are 3 inches long. They crave snuggling, but they smell of the tired streets and the dangerous places and the sewers and those freak shows that cat-yotes hang out at. I had something about a pregnancy test for men that is far from critical to discuss. I don't think we need to talk about my pregnancy test for men. You pay me $600. You pay me $600 and I punch you in the face. And then I run as far and as fast as I can. That's my Obamacare pregnancy test for men. So I don't judge you, whatever gender confusion or dysphoria you suffer from. I will give you a pregnancy test. Thank you. pregnancy test for men. $600. You give me the money first. And then I punch you in the face and then I run. That's enough about that bullshit. I was thinking about time travel today in the context of reincarnation, and I really don't think that that's going to be interesting to talk about. I'll just push through that. I'm going to say for now that this podcast, this little Saigon report for September the 15th, might not be a very long one because I've got another podcast later with a good friend of mine. And this one is just really just to keep you caught up. So I won't talk about time travel and reincarnation. I'll leave that as a thought experiment for you to ponder the relationship. If you could travel into the past and reincarnation were real, what sort of weird impacts would that have? Like if you remembered past lives, like let's say you went back and met yourself in the year 1922. And you told yourself something by going back in time to a previous life. You told yourself to buy Bitcoin in 2013 and then sell by 2020. You told yourself to buy a farm in some place in Canada. No, maybe not Canada, maybe Idaho. You told yourself to take care of yourself, to believe in yourself. You time traveled. And then later on, you have a memory of your reincarnated self telling you to tell you to tell you that it's going to be okay. And I think all of that is just too fucking ridiculous. Did you know that I'm a heavyweight? Did you know that I'm a heavyweight? If you listen to my words, you should count yourself lucky, you fucky. If you hear the pitter-patter of my heartstrings as they voiceify through the fragmented sidewalks of your sideways paradise, if you are able to travel with me through the fanciful worlds of those alcohol-addled memories of some jerkazoid hanging out by Pioneer Square, all scrumbled up on the sidewalk next to his favorite dog that's now dead. That's right, I'm a heavyweight. If you listen to me, if you're lucky enough to listen to me, I'm a heavyweight just like that Kinsella guy. I don't even know the whole social media backstory behind this. I read some weird-ass quote And I think I've heard of him once or twice. And if not knowing who this fucker is a big deal to you, fuck you. There are billions of people on planet Earth. And everybody in the world of social media probably thinks people should know who they are, especially if they have a little blue check mark next to their fucking name. But I don't really give a fuck. I just thought it was funny that he felt necessary to respond with, "I'm a heavyweight. You're lucky to be talking to me." And yes, I paraphrase. I'm paraphrasing. Heavyweight should know what that means. Yeah, I'm paraphrasing, but what the fuck? Get over yourself, Mr. Kinsella. Get the fuck over yourself is all I'm gonna say. That's enough heavyweight bullshit. Enough of that. Anywho, I was thinking about firestorms the last few days. If you've listened to my podcast, we've discussed them. A forest fire can become a firestorm, but they're not the same thing. Any old fire is not a firestorm. Firestorms are a force unto themselves. Once again, they create their own weather, which means once they start operating, they really do become unstoppable, with the exception of cutting off their fuel. And so that's one of the reasons why, with firestorms, you have to have huge fire breaks. And what's a fire break? A fire break is where you create a break between where the fire is and where it wants to go. And the break itself needs to be previously burned or chopped down or essentially made a no-fuel area, so the fire cannot jump. The problem with firestorms is that break would probably have to be miles in width. Miles. Because the firestorm will jump simply by throwing flames over your head. The firestorm will jump simply by throwing winds going 50, 60, 100, maybe even faster, 200 mile an hour winds at basically the temperature at which things burn. So what you have with a firestorm is the world's largest out of control wooden stove, and it will pull in the air it needs, and it will dehydrate things rapidly. You can go ahead and dump as much water as you want to on your house. The firestorm will look at that and smile, and about 5 minutes later, your house will be, you know, ashes. So there's nothing you can do as far as that goes. And as far as like fire retardant goes, listen, folks. Look up retardant. Look at what that word actually means. But does a fire retardant help you with a firestorm? The simple answer is no. It doesn't. Not really. It'll chew that up too. So I was thinking of something really kind of creepy. Like, what if a firestorm became so big, so gigantic, that it really became a fire hurricane? Thank you. That's right. So if we can imagine, put on our imagination helmets like real fucking people, and imagine a firestorm that becomes so massive, so powerful, that it becomes a fire hurricane. And I know that that's crazy, and you're going to say, Dan, that can never happen. It's not possible. Such things are fantastical. Maybe they are. But that would make a pretty good movie. You'd probably have, like, Bruce Willis. Or maybe that guy, The Rock. The Rock guy. He was in a movie, I think, like, I don't know. He was in a movie about an earthquake or something that completely obliterates, you know, California. The Rock. And he, like, takes a boat and tries to go up a tidal wave. It's pretty cool. So I don't know who would star, but imagine a washed-up fireman or cop or somebody who used to work for the government. Maybe a washed-up postal guy who got fired for stealing money out of people's mail. And he's homeless and he's living in, you know, Los Angeles. And all of a sudden, the fire cane comes. The fire cane, not hurricane, fire cane. And he ends up helping a family, a young family, a young woman with her kids, single mother, probably for social justice reasons, make her a minority, but make her ambiguously a minority. So we're forced into a racism cycle. So we have to figure things out, right? Kind of like Kamala Harris. I'm not really sure. They tell me she's black. I don't know. I suppose she is black, but, you know, not really. Indeed, the fire hurricane, the fire cane. And yeah, this is the main character, some washed up postal service guy, some old drunk who helps a young family. And then he ends up saving the day by killing some old white dude. That's enough of the fire cane, hurricane. Definitely have some lesbian write the script. Probably will win the Academy Award for 2026. Fire Cane, starring Brock Tadner. Used to be Raquel Simpson. So brave. Raquel went to Mexico and came back Brock. Brock Tadner. Fire Cane. And that's why I'm a heavyweight, you fucks. That's why I'm a heavyweight. So, I will be discussing The Love Boat, I think season 2, episode 14 tonight with my good friend. And in that particular episode of The Love Boat, there's a couple that are ventriloquists. I don't want to talk too much about it. But, you know, it occurred to me today that a lot of people, like, you know, when it comes to like things like clowns or ventriloquists, a lot of people get freaked out by ventriloquists, just like they get freaked out by clowns. And I gotta say, I have to admit, you know, when I was a kid, when I was like 8 years old, this movie came out called Magic. And it starred Anthony Hopkins. And it was about a ventriloquist who is on the verge of making it big, but basically, you know, goes a little fucking crazy and can't quite get over his fucking crush on his high school crush, this girl he was into that ended up marrying the football star who turned out to be some bum running a vacation rental in the fucking Adirondacks or the fucking, I don't know where the fuck, upstate New York. Upstate New York, the Poconos. I don't know. But a lot of people get freaked out by ventriloquists. Let's go through that topic very quickly. A lot of people get freaked out by ventriloquists. And so to my friend, I am sorry. I did not realize that he was kind of like, you know, freaked out by that shit. Next subject is actually a reading from the Bible from this morning I came across. I think it's worth looking at. This is from Luke, chapter 4, 18 and 19, verses 18 and 19. The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. I'm going to read that again, if that's okay. The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. Luke 4, 18 through 19, the word of the Lord, thanks be to God. And this is Jesus talking, okay? So this is not me talking about me or what I do or if I do anything. But this is the message of Jesus. Jesus did, I believe, come here to help the poor, the people who are physically poor, and I would even say as important, maybe more important, those who are poor in spirit. So Jesus did come to this place, to this earth. He did die on the cross, and he did this for the poor. But he also did this to free the prisoners. And when I say the prisoners, I think that the Lord in heaven knows the difference between those who are in prison for reasons that one could justify and understand, and those in prison for no good reason at all. So Jesus did come to free the prisoners. He did come to free the slaves. He came to open our eyes. And when I say open our eyes, I don't mean just literally to cure the blind so that they can see. I mean all of us. I mean people like me. I was blind my whole life, and Jesus Christ opened my eyes. So he came to, yeah, recovery of sight for the blind, but that means more than just what I think we would think literally. It does mean that, but it means more. And then he emphasizes to set the oppressed free, which means he uses the word free or the concept of freedom twice, and I think that is telling as well. But finally, he is proclaiming the year of the Lord's favor. And I find this interesting in contrast to Malachi 4, which, you know, my friend Jim has talked about a fair amount. Because, in essence, if you are proclaiming the year of the Lord's favor, it means that the Lord is looking kindly upon us. I don't know that that could be true right now. I really don't. I mean, God's love is infinite, but do I believe we have his favor right now? You know, as in, we have been so dedicated to a Christian life that God smiles. I don't think that that's the case. I really don't. And I'm not just casting aspersions on others. These fingers I have pointed in every direction are pointed at me as well. So I don't know about to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. I just don't know. But I did come across the reading kind of randomly, the way that I often read the Bible. Sometimes I read forward to back, and sometimes I simply open the Bible with the basic faith that Jesus knows my heart, and that Jesus is present, and that Jesus will prevent a demon from putting an idea into my head that would go against biblical teachings. And I know that last part sounds weird, but listen, if once you go down the road of believing in God, there's a whole bunch of other stuff you end up believing in, not because it has to go together, but because it's inevitable. So yes, I believe that demons exist, and yeah, I do think they try to whisper ideas into your head. And so when I approach the Bible this way, it's not meant as some kind of voodoo or Santeria. It's meant simply as the fact that I believe that God guides me as he guides all of us in his own way. We do have free will, but that doesn't mean that God isn't out there doing his thing. He is. In fact, that's the thing about free will. It makes God's job harder. Think about Moses, and I've asked this question before, but I'll ask it again, right? Moses led the Lord's people out of bondage. Moses led the chosen people to the promised land. Of all people you would think would be beloved by God, you would think Moses above all else, right? And yet, let's just, you know, think about this. Moses screwed up, and Moses was not allowed into the promised land. So it is something to think about, this whole question of God's role in things and God's influence on us and the fact that it's not always obvious what we're supposed to do. But here's the other thing too. I can imagine a scenario where Moses could have behaved differently with the staff and the rock and getting the water, where he could have been a better listener. I can imagine a scenario where that could have turned out differently. And I can imagine, I don't know this is true because I'm not God, I don't have God's thoughts, I'm not infinite, but if I could pretend for a moment to think that way, I can imagine God would have preferred Moses to not screw up at the rock. I would think God would have preferred that Moses go to the promised land. Now, does that mean there's another Bible? Does that mean there's another story where Moses doesn't screw up? No. I don't believe that kind of stuff can be changed. Even though it's fun to think about things like time travel and the multiverse and stuff like that, I don't believe those things can be changed. I think that they're fixed and absolute. But do I believe in my heart that God would have preferred that things had been different? Yes. God loves Moses. God loves Moses right now. Moses is sitting next to God right now, along with many others. But that doesn't mean that Moses didn't screw up. And it doesn't mean that Moses wasn't forbidden from getting to the promised land. Things can be different. We have free will. We can make different choices. Next topic. So someone posted something today about wanting to live in a rural area, so rural that they could shower outside. That's right. Can you imagine living so rural that you could shower outside and right next to your soap tray would be a pistol? And so while you're showering, you could pull out your .357 Magnum and shoot at targets. And you could also be drinking some whiskey. And your speakers could be playing Astrue Gilberto, Brazilian samba jazz at 10 gorillion decibels. Not much of a topic. I will move on to the next topic. So there's a lot of talk about civil war right now. And I have said this before and I'll say this again. Probably one of the worst things that could happen to this country at this point would be a civil war. I think people look at the war between the states, 1861 to 1865. And they look at that war and they say to themselves, well, it'll be like that, but it probably wouldn't. In fact, in reality, the war between the states was way more like a traditional war. You know, armies versus armies, leaders versus leaders, different colors, different flags. The American Civil War that was fought in the 19th century was much more like an actual regular war, is my point. Historically, civil wars are not like that. Historically, and this goes back to Roman times, the concept of a civil war, it's more like Yugoslavia in the 1990s. Or Beirut, Lebanon for the last gorillion years. That's what a civil war looks like. Street to street, corner to corner, building to building, you have no fucking clue who your friends are. You You have no fucking clue who your enemies are. That's civil war. That's bad. And the thing about civil wars is that they can get so out of control you don't recover. Let's be more specific historically. Robert E. Lee, who was a famous Southern general during the American Civil War of the quote-unquote 19th century, right? Robert E. Lee, people went to him and said, shouldn't you take forces up into the hills, up into the mountains? Fight guerrilla warfare. Keep fighting. Don't give up. And his answer to that was, this war would never end. Because he knew the difference. He was classically trained. He had read his books. He knew what would happen if a real civil war took over this country. It would probably not end for decades. Insurgency after insurgency. Reprisal after reprisal. And it's not like things ended that well in 1865. So imagine if Robert E. Lee and all the other Southern generals, instead of ending the war, took their troops up into the hills and fought a guerrilla campaign. And as bad as that would have been, what I am talking about right now is way fucking worse. So I think we should hope and pray there is no civil war. I think we should hope and pray that Americans come to their senses, you know? I mean, I'm an anarchist, but I will tell you, if the average American was willing to remember that this was supposed to be a free country, I think we'd be closer to finding peace again. But again, how do you do that? How do you convince people that this thing called freedom is not just something you want, it's something you need? How do you do that? Especially when you're dealing with crazy people. Because that's what it feels like now. When I see people outside, Tongatamanu, I see people in a cult. And so, yeah, it does look like we're headed towards civil war because we're already passing through a town called madness. But I hope we don't go there. I pray we don't. I pray to Jesus in heaven that that does not happen. But so far, our leadership, so far, the people with the money are doing everything they can to trigger it. And you can figure out why. I don't have a full idea. You know, maybe you don't either. Last topic, shockumentaries. Yeah, I grew up in the 70s, and during the 70s, there was this huge sort of, I don't know, this complete explosion of these documentaries, a lot of them really, really fucking low budget, like Overlords of the UFO, or the Legend of Boggy Creek, and various multiple documentaries about Bigfoot, and UFOs, and the Loch Ness Monster, and Satanism, and ghosts, and ESP, and dimensions, and killer bees. Oh, the killer bees! The fucking killer bees of Planet 3. Fucking killer bees of Planet 3. And they were designed to titillate and to scare. They were designed to shock. And that's why I call them shockumentaries, because ostensibly, they're sold as documentaries, right? You're going to go see The Legend of Boggy Creek, but really, Are you seeing a documentary of the truth of some creature in Fauk, Arkansas? Or are you seeing something else? I don't know. I don't know, folks. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. But I used to love the shockumentaries. I think this is why I like In Search Of. In Search Of is a show designed around that concept. And I would say I prefer In Search Of to other shows like That's Incredible, because In Search Of, I think, took itself seriously up to a point, but it never became ridiculous. Whereas That's Incredible became really stupid and ridiculous, you know? As a kid, I gotta say, I just did not like That's Incredible. But I loved In Search Of. And I don't know if Leonard Nimoy enjoyed doing that show. I suspect he did not. Like, there's this part of me that wonders, there's this episode where he's talking about ESP and things like, you know, the zodiac and your sign. And they told him something like, you know, what you're going through will end soon. It's like, well, that's interesting. And the funny thing about In Search Of is that Nimoy did this show. He started the show between the old Star Trek and the Star Trek movies. You can imagine Shatner coming by and saying, Dude, they're offering us $1,000,000,000 to do a Star Trek movie. Would you like, hey, Leonard, man, you want to be Spock again? And the other thing, too, about In Search Of is that the music is awesome. You know, you can make fun of it. You can mock the soundtrack of In Search Of. But I believe it's perfect genius, like complete genius for what they're trying to do. They have this incredible, just ridiculously over the top, overly dramatic music. They have this one organ score, this one like chapel organ score that they reuse for dramatic purposes over and over again. I just love it. I love it. The show itself captures the paranoia and the fear and the irrationality and the lack of information of a period of American history where we were still a country of people where if you wanted to know something, you read the newspaper, you listened to the radio, or you went to the fucking library. Before the internet became a thing for people. So In Search Of, you know, it's my Tangata Manu. So for Tuesday, September, the holy smokes, is it September? I have to check again because I can't believe it. September the 15th, 2020. Boy, time flies when you're having fun. For September the 15th, 2020, at approximately 6:18 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, I would say to all my listeners, I'm a heavyweight. If you're listening to me, you know, you should soak it all in and consider yourself lucky because I'm a heavyweight. My words are like the iron core of the planet. My words will echo through eternity like the platypus kings, like the monkey hordes of Rector 12. So have a great fucking rest of your Tuesday.